on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey friends, how are you? Welcome into another edition of the YoteCast podcast as we continue to tell the stories of student athletes, coaches, administrators, and so much more. We'll get you coming up in the show today, a conversation with Coyote quarterback Aiden Bauman about taking control of the offense last year. And now, you know, he did that, kind of came in on D-Days, led the Coyotes to come from behind victory. Now we'll get the chance to start D-Days for the first time. So we'll have that conversation with Aiden coming up here in the show and just how he settled in over the last year to the quarterback position. We'll also talk to Coyote Hall of Famer Lita Rolfe, who swam for the Yotes from 2005 to 2008. We'll talk to her about her career and obviously the improvements that the swim team has continued to make, the program and the support it gets. And she's obviously thrilled for the program, and also find out what she's up to today. She does a lot of work with Special Olympics. So we'll have that conversation coming up in the show as well. And we'll also get you up to date on what's going on with Murray State. That's the Coyote opponent this week on the football field, and it is the newest member of the Missouri Valley Football Conference. Well, this week is Dakota Days, and obviously Dakota Days has been going on all week, but it culminates with the football game on Saturday and hopefully a happy after party wherever you may celebrate Dakota Days on Saturday night, and hopefully Sunday's a recovery day for you, whatever it may be. Obviously, when you look at Dakota Days, it's something of tradition, right? You get a lot of excitement. People come back to campus, come back to Vermilion, because it is a part of what you are, right? If you went to school, whatever school you went to, you may be a South Dakota Coyote through and through. You may have gone to a different school, but every school has homecoming, and it's always an exciting time. A lot of events that lead up to the game on Saturday, and a lot of things going on throughout the course of the week. But it's a big tradition at the University of South Dakota, and hopefully a huge crowd on hand on Saturday for the football game as the Coyotes take on Murray State. Murray State has some traditions of their own. This is an interesting place, right? We have not competed against Murray State in really anything. Murray State and South Dakota have played in softball. That's it as far as what the two have matched up in sports. That's it, just softball. And that was in, I think it was 2019, maybe, that they played in like Florida and at one of those tournaments. So maybe you don't know a whole lot about the Murray State Racers. And I thought I would help try to fill you in on what to expect from Murray State coming up this week. Well, the Racers were originally, all of Murray State's athletic teams at one time were known as the Thoroughbreds. And obviously that came from the love of thoroughbred racing throughout the state of Kentucky. But when you have a lengthy nickname, it doesn't always fit well in newspaper headlines and some of that stuff. So then it was shortened. It was the T-Breds. They were the Breds. They were shortened to Racehorses and Racers. And then in the late 50s, a shorter moniker of the Racers became the generally accepted nickname for Murray State athletics teams. And everybody at the university just followed suit. So this is kind of derived by somebody else and other groups who kind of came up with this name Racers. And then all of a sudden, Murray State started going with Racers. And just at the university, they just kind of followed suit. But the Murray State baseball team kept Breds as the nickname, B-R-E-D-S, not bread like you eat a sandwich or anything like that, but Breds, like thoroughbreds. They kept that name until they switched, the baseball team switched to the Racers in 2014. So a decade ago was the last as far as the thoroughbred or bread nickname was for Murray State. So baseball was the last to transition, but they were the thoroughbreds originally, and then you have I think T-Breds is kind of interesting, right? So you have some of that, and obviously newspapers are like, man, we don't have this kind of space, we don't have that kind of ink, we can't be writing thoroughbreds every single time. So they kind of shortened it up. They ended up landing on Racers, and the university just kind of said, cool, let's roll with that. So baseball was the last to switch, and that was in 2014. So all of Murray State's athletics are known as the Racers, but obviously Racers still has something to do with thoroughbred racing. Speaking of Racers having to do with thoroughbred racing, in 1976, Murray State began a tradition at its home football games. 1976 was the first year that a thoroughbred horse made a lap around Stewart Stadium track after a Racer touchdown. The original horse was named Violet Cactus and is buried inside the stadium. Since 1985, every horse that has been used carries the name of Racer 1. Murray State is the only school in the nation that has this type of tradition. So at the beginning of the game, I believe, and then after touchdowns, Racer 1 will sprint around the track because there is a track around the football field, kind of separating the field and the stands. So it all started back in 1976. They started getting a lap around Stewart Stadium track after a Racer touchdown. And since then, they've been able to continue the tradition. But as the legend has it, the original horse, Violet Cactus, is buried inside of the stadium. All right, maybe that's more than you cared to know about the traditions of Murray State, about their nickname, about Racer 1. But now you kind of know a little bit about the newest member of the Missouri Valley Football Conference. And the Coyotes are scheduled to visit Murray State next year, October the 5th. And so we'll see for our own eyes the Racer 1 tradition and their stadium and in the city. I've never been to Murray, Kentucky. And so it'll give us an opportunity to explore somewhere new. But they are the newest member of the Missouri Valley Football Conference. All right, coming up in the show, we'll talk more about Murray State with Neil Bradley. He is the longtime radio voice of the Murray State Racers. He spent more than 30 years as the basketball voice and football. He is retired from calling basketball games, but still does football. And so somebody who's very ingrained in Murray State athletics, we'll talk to him coming up in the show as well. And we'll also visit with South Dakota starting quarterback Aiden Bauman. That is coming up here in the podcast as well. Let's get it started with one of the newest Hall of Famers into the Henry Hyder Coyote Sports Hall of Fame. She was a swimmer for South Dakota from 2005 to 2008 and a seven-time All-American, a national runner-up in 2008. This week, I had a chance to catch up with Lita Rolfe. One of the newest members of the Henry Hyder Coyote Sports Hall of Fame is Lita Rolfe, who was a swimmer for the University of South Dakota and a silver medalist at the 2008 Division II National Championship meet in Columbia, Missouri. Lita, first of all, congratulations. Thanks for the time. And I know you had a chance to kind of celebrate the Hall of Fame induction. What was the experience like for you to be back on campus in that setting?
To be back on campus was great. Things have changed so much since I have been a student. It was pretty great to see all of the improvements that they've made since going Division One. It was great to see a ton of familiar faces. I was lucky enough that a couple of my college teammates are close enough that they were able to come back. And when the 2006 track men's track team was there getting inducted as well, that was pretty cool because we used to hang out with them quite a bit. And it was really nice to have all of that come back. It felt like being home, even though it was all new.
You look at your career, it was absolutely incredible. You were the NCC Freshman of the Year in 2005, and your career culminates with the Most Valuable Swimmer in the NCAA as a senior in 2008. Those are two incredible honors you can have throughout the course of your career. When you look back and reflect on your time at South Dakota and your swimming career, how do you just kind of assess your time and your experience?
Well, I mean, had I not been a collegiate athlete, I think my college experience would have been completely different. I don't know how students go to college far away from home and have to make friends. I was lucky enough to be a college athlete and ended up with 40 brand new family members pretty much when I got on campus. And it was something that definitely helped me work hard throughout the years too, because without solid teammates, that is just too hard to do. There's so many hours of practices that you put in and things that you miss out on socially because of your athletic commitment, that without solid teammates and a really good coaching staff, it would be way, way too difficult to try to make it through all of that.
You had a school record at one point that held for 14 years. I believe it was in the 400-yard individual medley. Held for 14 years. It's still the second fastest time in program history. Did it surprise you that the record held for that long?
I was surprised that it held that long, actually, just because with them moving Division One, I mean, they brought in so many high caliber athletes that I was expecting it to go down pretty fast, actually. But I watched every year, of course, and have stayed in touch with Jason and, you know, kind of, is it going to happen this year? And when it finally did, it was pretty cool that it, you know, it held for that long. Because when I was swimming, the record board was up on the, you know, the wall, and you'd see it during practice all day, every day. And it just gives you, you know, goals to achieve, because you want your name up there as an athlete. You want to be the best that there's ever been. And to have somebody look at that name for so long was pretty cool.
At what point did you know that swimming might be your ticket to college?
Well, I was pretty awkward as a child. I was not very coordinated. And my parents put us into swim lessons because my mom actually had her oldest brothers drowned when they were kids. And so she put us in swim lessons so we would be able to swim. And that was the only thing that I ended up being pretty decent at. I had to work really hard at it. I was not good from the get-go. But as I progressed, started swimming, you know, I kept swimming club, and then I swam in high school, and I ended up setting a state record for Wyoming my junior year and my senior year. And so I kind of figured that was probably going to be an easier way for me to get to school and maybe get a little financial assistance as well through that.
You're from the state of Wyoming. I believe it was Newcastle is where you grew up. How did you end up at South Dakota, and how did you know that that was right for you?
So I was recruited by, just a handful of schools, nothing crazy or anything. But I went out to Vermilion on a recruiting trip and met the coach and got to meet some of the team and all that stuff. And it just seemed like a good fit. It wasn't going to be a huge change for me just because Vermilion was fairly small at that point. Like, they didn't even have a Walmart in Vermilion when I moved there. And so coming from a town of 3,000, and I think Vermilion was right around 10,000 when I moved there, it wasn't such a culture shock, which was great.
It's a city now because it has a Walmart, right?
I know. Yeah.
It's funny when you talk about things that have changed at USD. Obviously, so many different facilities have changed. And I know you've seen the renderings and the plans for the addition that's going on right now to the Wellness Center for the pool. And I'm sure there's a little bit of jealousy about that new pool that will go in. But what has been your reaction to just the commitment to the swim team as well and watching its growth? They've had a lot of success here recently.
Yes, I think it is just so much to see that the program continues to grow and there continues to be support for that, because that was something that was kind of scary when we came in, is that the team really wasn't, nobody really cared about the swim team because there wasn't a whole lot going on. I mean, there was not none of our GPA, like the team GPA wasn't great and things when I had come in. And so to see that they are doing so well and getting support from the university is so great. I am definitely a little bit jealous that they don't have to swim in the dungeon like I did for all 4 years of them being there, but it's only going to help that program grow, because that's something that a lot of people will come in and they'll look at the facilities when they come in to train, and they're going to come to college and think, oh, I don't know if I want to train here, all that, you know, because it's a lot of time that you're going to be spending in that pool. And if it's dark and no windows, and I mean, it just ends up, that is not a pull for recruiting, but this new facility is definitely going to help them with that.
I always think that chlorine smell in the dome pool is different than anywhere else.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it is. It just feels like coming home.
It feels like home. Jason Mahold has been around this program now a very long time, obviously, and I believe it was right around the time that you came to USD was when he began as the coach. What do you make of his impact on the program and just his lengthy tenure as the coach of swimming and diving?
Oh, it's fantastic. Jason came in my sophomore year and had to come into a program that was not the best. That was when, you know, the GPAs were kind of low. And I mean, I think they were real close to cutting the men's swim team even and things like that at that point. And so the fact that Jason and Anthony were able to come in and just turn that program around, and they were able to, you know, I mean, they trained us and we had a national champion and me as a runner up. I mean, we took 8, 10, 12 people to nationals every year that I was there under Jason's coaching and guidance. I mean, without Jason, I'm not sure that the program would still be anywhere near what it is today.
When you graduated USD, Lita, did you have any thought that maybe you had accomplished enough to one day be in this position of being in the Coyote Sports Hall of Fame?
I mean, I was definitely hopeful. I had my fingers crossed that I would maybe get the opportunity even to be on like the list of people that they consider. I feel like is a big honor. Not that they don't release that or anything, but just to have the opportunity to have been an athlete and be able to perform at the level that I did was pretty, I mean, not very many people get the opportunity to do that. And so to have that happen was pretty great.
I understand now you work a little bit with Special Olympics and some of that stuff. Why did you choose to go that route and why is it important to you?
I ended up working at a facility. It was called Renew, and it was a facility that worked with adults with individuals with developmental disabilities. And I really wasn't sure. I just kind of tried it out, thought it would be okay, and I just loved it. I'm actually a co-owner of a company that works with adults and children with disabilities. I am the local coordinator for our County 3 Masters Special Olympics team. And so we do bowling in the fall. We do cross-country skiing and snowshoeing, and we do basketball and swimming and track. And so being able to be a part of something like that is just the icing on the cake. Like every individual, every athlete, every person that's involved with Special Olympics just has such a positive attitude, and they're so happy to be there just to be able to compete. It is it's an experience that I think that everyone should try to have. Even if you just go and volunteer one day at a Special Olympics event, you just don't see that type of joy anywhere else.
I saw a quote from you that you said you think that someone would have to try to not enjoy themselves if they were involved in Special Olympics because of all that joy and positivity that you're talking about.
Yes, that's exactly it. I was lucky. I actually got to go to Nationals in October in Orlando last year. And just, I mean, there were thousands of people in Orlando for that event, and every single one of them was in an amazing mood. They were so happy to be there. Everybody's so nice. It's just something that is unlike anything else that I've ever experienced in athletics. I mean, we're all, you know, when we go in for nationals and things like that, we were all pretty serious. I mean, we always had a good time and things, but it's nothing like Special Olympics is, because they're there to compete, but they are there to just enjoy everything that they're being offered.
No doubt, they don't seem to put the same pressure on themselves as many do in athletics today. Lita, continue all the great work that you're doing. Thanks so much for the time. Congratulations on the standout, fantastic career at USD and your induction into the Hall of Fame. It's incredibly deserved, and it's been a joy to discuss it with you and kind of relive your time at USD.
Thank you.
That is former South Dakota Coyote swimmer Lita Rolfe, a 7-time All-American and one of the newest members into the Henry Hyder Coyote Sports Hall of Fame. South Dakota back at home on Saturday. It is Dakota Days as the Coyotes play host to Murray State, the newest member of the Missouri Valley Football Conference. They come to Vermilion from the state of Kentucky, and we're joined by the play-by-play voice of Murray State, Neil Bradley. Neil, great to chat with you, and welcome to the league. I'm sure it's been an interesting last year or so for Murray State as they prepare for this transition.
Yes, it certainly has been, but we knew the gauntlet that laid ahead of us whenever we found out this was going to happen, that maybe not every week, but almost every week, that we will be playing a team ranked or getting votes in the top 25. That just seems to be the price of doing business in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, but that's where the Racers want to be. We do have, I know, a ways to go to, I believe, challenge for championships in the league, but hopefully this is the start of something that will get us there eventually.
What can you tell us about Murray State for our fans who are unfamiliar just with Murray State and their history? You've been there a long time, Neil, and I know you did men's basketball broadcast for a long time and have stepped away from that, but as you continue your Hall of Fame career as the radio voice of Murray State football, you've been around this school for a long time. What can you tell us about Murray State?
Well, the one thing you don't have to worry about Murray State is hopping out of the conference in a couple of years when a better opportunity comes. We were in the OVC for 74 seasons. We're looking for a long relationship in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. But it's really kind of different this year. It's the first year that I've had a football season that didn't involve Ohio Valley Conference teams. And so that's quite a bit different. But as far as the history of Racer football, there have been some good teams. Frank Beamer coached at Murray State, went on to great things at Virginia Tech. Mike Godfrey also was a head coach here. He had some good teams at Kansas and at Cincinnati and at Pittsburgh. And then, of course, Houston Nutt, who had probably our best two back-to-back seasons in 1995 and 96. He went to Boise State and then on to Arkansas and has had a pretty good coaching career as well. So, but really, those championship seasons have been few and far between in football. The last one was 2002 in the Ohio Valley Conference, and in fact, we had struggled to even get winning seasons. Our current coach went back-to-back with winning seasons, had some trouble last year. We had terrible injuries out of the gate, lost one of our top running backs, lost our quarterback in game one, key defensive players, our number one receiver, and just really never recovered from that. So we're hungry for wins. I know our reputation at Murray State is in men's basketball. I've been a part of being able to go to 13 NCAA tournaments there over a 32-year career. So that was something that they were able to do quite successfully. And hopefully somewhere down the road we can make some trips to the FCS playoffs and make some noise there.
I know you mentioned the team. You felt like they still have some strides to go to be competitive in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. But what has been the buzz around Murray just in the idea of a change in league, not only in football, but obviously in the other sports with the Missouri Valley Conference? What's been the buzz about the change in conference realignment?
Well, it's very exciting. I think our fans were ready for a change, especially when some of the teams left the OVC ahead of us, Belmont, Austin Peay, and Eastern Kentucky, and the door really was opened for us to perhaps join the Missouri Valley. And, I think there was a lot of people wondering, would we be able to compete? And in the Missouri Valley Conference, per se, very competitive. I know we lost all but one of our scholarship players for men's basketball, so not as good as we usually are in basketball. Still had a winning season despite that, but competitive in virtually all the other sports. We didn't have any where we finished at the bottom or near the bottom in any sport. This was a kind of a different animal here, though, in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, and this is a big compliment. We had the commissioner on this past Saturday at halftime, and we said we've called this, and others too, the SEC of FCS football. We know it's tough, know it's difficult, but looking very forward to it. From the competitive standpoint, I mean, we were competitive in the OVC, but maybe a way to go. I think we'll be competitive in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, but as far as challenging for championships, we might be a little ways away from doing that, hopefully sooner rather than later, though.
Yeah, no question. I saw, I believe it was on your Twitter account, X account, if you will, that the attendance from this past weekend in the league. Boy, Murray State had over 13,000 in that conference opener this past weekend. That's a lot of excitement.
And it's, yeah, I think that also says a lot about the venture into the Missouri Valley Football Conference. I mean, this was a team that was 2-9 last year. A lot of 2-9 teams, they can't put 5,000 fans in the seats for the next season. And this is, a fan base that's very hungry. They're very excited about it. And even last week, we were 1-2. It wasn't a perfect game start to finish, but the Racers did have some good moments. And I think that left fans hungry, over 13,000 of them. Hopefully many of those will be back a week from this Saturday when it's SIU. And, oh, my goodness, it's another top 10 team as the Salukis are ranked sixth. So it really never ends. But fans really are excited about being in the Missouri Valley Football Conference.
Yeah, get used to saying ranked team that you're playing each and every week, because we talk about it every single season and every single week. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing at the exact same time. I was tuned into the broadcast on a drive home from Fargo last Saturday, and wouldn't you know it, the first conference game for Murray State, and their first points in conference play, a safety. How about that, huh?
Yeah, I don't know that anyone could have ever predicted that. I mean, we've had many seasons, because I went back through and looked. There's many seasons we don't get any safeties. I mean, it's very difficult. And I don't recall ever a game in 30-plus years of calling Murray State football starting a game with a safety. So it's just a rare occurrence. And it turned out we needed those 2 points when you win by two, but we didn't realize it at the time, just how big that was. But that helped set the tone. It was one of our better defensive games, even though the team, they did give up 4 touchdowns. They at least made Indiana State earn. There wasn't a lot of big plays there, a lot of big drives that did lead to those touchdowns, though. That's going to be an area where they certainly will have to improve.
I've noticed with Murray State over the last year or two, they've added a handful of transfers, really kind of changing the makeup of this team.
They have. They haven't relied as much on the transfer portal as I think they did this past season. And I think it's just out of a have-to case. So look, we have to get better, have to get better quicker, get bigger very quickly. And that was the quickest route to do that. As usual, there's going to be some that'll pay big dividends. But even nowadays, you don't get the level of FBS transfer that you once could, because now they can transfer from one FBS school to another and play immediately. And that was the one holdout you'd get at the FCS school. You'd say, hey, you can come and play for us immediately. So we had some instant stars. Anthony Downs, who transferred from Clemson, it's one of the best running backs we ever had. Derek Cullors had 1 year with us out of Texas Christian, one of the best, in fact, set the rushing record all time. And those guys are a little tougher to come by now, but we have some big contributors, Cole Rusk being one of those, tight end out of the MAC. He's putting up really good numbers for us. So I've seen a lot of help, especially on the offensive side of the ball and in the secondary.
Well, you look at Murray State's schedule, they're 2-2 on the season after pounding Presbyterian. A couple of really tough FBS games that they went on the road to Louisville and Middle Tennessee before the conference opener. So that record a little bit deceiving right now. This is a team that right now hasn't lost in FCS competition.
Yeah, that's true. And we didn't really know what we had. Indiana State, they were picked right above us, I think 10th. We're picked 11th in the league. But you know this. I didn't know it until I saw it. I watched their other games, and then I saw them with their quarterback, Cade Chambers. They're a different team with Cade Chambers at quarterback. They're a pretty good team. I don't know if they're a contending team, but they gave us all we could handle. They were very impressive. I liked what I saw out of Indiana State. The running back, Les Lawrence, we had 0 answers for him. He had one hole after another one. So they were certainly something to see in that inaugural Missouri Valley Football Conference game. But the Racers were able to hold on and win with some big defensive plays just in the final minute.
Neil, what's the identity of this team? What can our fans expect to see out of the Murray State offense and defense this week?
Dean Hood is an old-school football coach. He wants to run the football and run it successfully. So that's the better part of the game. wants to be really good defensively, and we have made some strides in that area to be somewhat better defensively. So that's what he wants to do. If everything's clicking the Racers' way, they're going to run it a lot. They'll pass it some and play good defense. They want to force turnovers and not turn it over. That was an issue 2 weeks ago at Middle Tennessee. Kind of uncharacteristic for Dean's teams. Turned it over four times. Cut those turnovers this last time. But the thing that's really been lacking, and you can just take a look at this in the stats, is they don't put much pressure on the quarterback. They've had a limited number of sacks. They have one quarterback hurry in four games, and that is something that is going to cost them down the road, especially when they get to a few of these teams in the league that throw the ball a lot. That is going to be something that does need to be corrected. And also, 11 penalties, and that's been an issue. Dean's teams generally are among the best in the league in fewest penalties per game. Now we're one of the top teams in the league, and 11 penalties, 125 yards. That's going to get you beat a lot of times, and that's another area that they're going to have to improve greatly on if they want to win football games.
Tell me a little bit more about DJ Williams, the quarterback, obviously OVC Freshman of the Year, and then missed most of pretty much all of last season after an injury, but a guy who obviously throws the ball well, and he's not afraid to get out and run it either.
Well, the thing that you like about him is he doesn't throw bad balls in terms of into double coverage, triple coverage, balls that are incomplete for him. He maybe overthrow a player or something like that. Last season as a team, I think we had 15 interceptions. And this year, DJ hasn't thrown any through four games. We did have a backup quarterback that threw one. So he has four touchdown passes, and he has only doesn't have any interceptions at this point. However, he hasn't thrown it as much as he probably would like to. I still think he's searching for that rhythm. We saw a little bit more of it maybe come to the forefront in the win against Indiana State, but that isn't there. And you can still see from time to time the hesitancy to really take off and run like we saw him run in his freshman season. And in every player that I've spoken with that has had knee injuries in a variety of sports, it takes a little while to get past that mental block where you don't think about, I don't want to hurt my leg on this particular play. It's going to take him a while. I think he's getting better, but he's not quite the mobile quarterback that we saw his freshman season.
If Murray State were to come to South Dakota and upset the Coyotes, who just got into the top 25 this week after a big win last week, what goes well for Murray State to give them that opportunity?
I think it would 100% have to be run the ball very effectively. Of course, they can't turn it over, but they're going to have over 200 yards, I think, on the ground. That'll be a tall task, but they have to get some kind of pressure on the quarterback. Can't have him lay back there all day and throw. They have to be effective with their blitzes and probably win the turnover battle by at least two. I would think that would give them a chance to win, and the penalties are going to have to be five, six, or less, somewhere in that category. All of those things, you're going to have to check every one of those boxes to have a chance to win in that game. You know, and that's kind of what they're looking at. I mean, this is one of those games, you know, when the season starts, like, well, at least they're not ranked. Hey, guess what? Now they're ranked. And they're, you know, you take a look at all the stats. I've watched two of your games. It's a really good football team. It's not a fluke ranking. You're ranked because you're really good. And that win last week was just absolutely amazing. We watched as much as we could before we had to scuttle off to the game. But you know, we were really proud of you all for getting the win. It's like, oh, great. Now we have to play them this week. And that took some of the luster off of it for us.
Yeah, no question. Well, it should be a fun atmosphere. It's Dakota Days, our homecoming, so you'll get to be introduced to Vermilion at its finest come this weekend when Murray State makes the trip. Neil, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you on Saturday, and wish you guys safe travel on your way to Vermilion.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate it being on.
He's Neil Bradley. He is the play-by-play voice of the Murray State Racers. They'll be making their first ever trip to Vermilion, South Dakota for any sport, and specifically, obviously, for football, which they will get their taste of Dakota Days tradition on Saturday right here in the Dakota Dome. South Dakota's starting quarterback is Aiden Bauman. He took over last year on the Dakota Days game. If you'll remember, the Coyotes were taking on Southern Illinois. South Dakota trailed by a couple of scores. Things weren't going well. The Coyotes made a change at quarterback. Insert Aiden Bauman. He led the Coyotes from a deficit, come from behind victory over Southern Illinois. And the legend of Aiden Bauman began. And he has obviously got off to a great start this season, helping this Coyote football team to a 3-1 record at the moment. I had a chance to catch up with him this week to talk about just adapting to being the starting quarterback at South Dakota. Aiden, you get set for a Dakota Days football game, and I know you're always happy to play at home, but last week, obviously, a big win for the season, big win for this program, winning at North Dakota State and just really dominating in that first half, especially up 21-3 at halftime. Describe that game and just kind of going through it and your team jumping out to a lead, and then obviously you guys doing what you had to in the second half.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, jumping out to an early lead like that, it really helps. You know, we executed really well the whole first half. You know, my guys made some plays out there. I was really proud of them. O-line played unbelievable. Running backs ran the ball really well. You know, obviously Carter Bell making some plays out there in the first half. In the second half, we hit a little bit of adversity. We had a 3-and-out, which gave them some momentum, but, you know, showed the grit of our guys by, you know, coming out in that last drive, and I think it was 8 minutes or 8.5 minutes, driving it down and getting a field goal to make it another two-possession game. It was huge, so it was a really big win for us.
You know, making it a two-possession game there late, we were talking about that drive. It was almost a 9-minute drive you guys put together. You did to North Dakota State what they do to so many other teams, and that's just grind out the clock. But that third down pass you completed it to J.J. Galbraith, I mean, that was obviously gigantic for that drive to continue, and a huge moment, and it seems like just a small 8-yard gain, but that might have been the play of the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I just went through my reads like I usually do. You know, Coach Davis does a great job of, you know, getting us prepared for really any look. You know, you expect the team to come out in a certain way, and maybe sometimes they come out in another way, you know. But, you know, JJ made a great play. You know, I think I put it a little bit behind him, but he made a great catch, and he got upfield and got the first down and kept that drive alive. It was a huge play for us.
You just keep on rolling, and you look at some of those plays in that game. There's RPOs, and there's you escaping some traffic and backpedaling to throw the ball downfield. As you're going through a play, when does your mind start working as you approach the line of scrimmage, and how do you kind of decide, do you hand it off? Do you throw the ball? And where's it going?
Yeah, you know, like I said, Coach Davis does a great job of getting us ready. So he always says have a pre-snap plan. You know, and as a quarterback, you always have to. You can't just go in there and, you know, pick a receiver before the play. You have to see the whole defense. You know, our RPO game is a really huge part of what we do. And, you know, you have to read certain guys, see certain keys. And at the end of the day, though, you have to play confident. You know, you can't guess. You can't say, ooh, I want to do that, but I don't know. You have to play confident. And I think everybody did a good job of that on Saturday.
Obviously, it's a huge win, but it doesn't mean much if you don't win any other games. How do you get this team this week to just settle down from that victory and move on? Focus now, Murray State.
Yeah, that's been our message the whole week, and we've done a good job of that. You know, I think, obviously, like you said, I mean, it's a big win for our program. You know, we enjoyed it on Saturday, but after that, you move on, and every week's the same. You know, you got to prepare every week. Just go in and execute to the best of your ability, control the controllables, and we've done a good job of that so far this season. We just have to keep continuing to do that.
This is Dakota Days. A year ago on Dakota Days, you were kind of put in finally an opportunity to run the offense. It came in the second half, the team down a couple of scores against Southern Illinois. What do you remember about that game and coming in knowing, okay, you're starting with a deficit, you've got two quarters to try to figure this thing out?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a special day for me. I mean, it was the first collegiate game I played in, so that was really cool. But I just remember thinking that, you know, you can't ever make a moment too big. You know, it's just football, like I've always played my entire life. So just go out there and, you know, keep a level head and just make my reads and make the plays and do my job, you know, my 1/11th, as we like to say.
Well, as you go through that game, obviously the team comes from behind and wins that game. What was that moment like for you, knowing you'd come in the second half? I mean, I think one of the most popular positions on a football team is a backup quarterback, right? And then you come in and you do that, and now you're really popular with the fans.
Yeah, no, it was gratifying for sure. You know, I mean, I've been in college now. It's my fourth year. So it was gratifying to, you know, get in there and finally prove what I could do. But ultimately, I've said this before, just, you know, in the past couple of months, it gave me a position to be a leader. And I really take pride in that. And I feel like that's one thing that I've really worked to improve on, you know, just this offseason into this season, is becoming a leader. And I think that was a really big stepping stone for me to get to that point.
When you talk about becoming a leader and one thing that you're working on, what else have you worked on over the last few games of last year and in the offseason as you get ready for this year and really take control of this offense for a full season?
Yeah, I think, well, one huge thing was mobility for me, being able to maneuver the pocket. I think I've continued to improve on that. I think there's always room to improve, though. Another thing, like I said, like being a leader, especially with this new offense, you know, that was one thing I took responsibility with right away, is that I need to really learn this offense from day one right away so that I can be, you know, another coach for these guys. And I feel like I've done a good job of that, but there's always new stuff, and, you know, I have to keep learning, keep, you know, reading things at a high level. But yeah, those are really the main things.
You know, the fans here have gotten used to quarterbacks that get out and run the football a lot. The Noah Shepherds and Dante Warrens, Chris Strebler's, Austin Simmons. You're a different type of quarterback, but I know you still get out and run when you have to. Have you tried to use that as motivation, just knowing what this fan base kind of expects out of the position?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, working on mobility is a big thing. Any position, you need to be able to move. It's, you know, it's a moving game. But I do what I do to the best of my ability. And, you know, if it calls for a run at a certain point, you know, I mean, I'm a bigger guy. I think I'd like to think if I need to, you know, barrel down and get a couple yards, I can do that. But right now it's just being a field general out there trying to run the offense and, you know, getting the ball to guys that can make plays with it.
Well, I believe it was a Lamar game. You broke a couple of tackles and got out to the edge and ran for a gain. So it can be done. You know, as you've worked into this season, obviously there's a new offensive coordinator. When you were thrown into it last year, Bob Nielsen was calling plays. The offense was trying to figure some things out, but now with an offensive coordinator, really new staff, how have things changed for you personally with this offense?
Yeah, I mean, it calls for efficiency, I like to say, which we've done a really good job of. You know, the good thing that Davis does is he tailors it to our strengths, you know. So if it calls for, you know, the last two games where we've thrown it, I think, 20, 21 times combined, then great. I mean, those are two great wins for us, you know. And our running backs have done an unbelievable job running the ball. Our O-line has been unreal. You know, even receivers blocking out there, they've done a great job. You know, and if it comes to a game where I have to throw 30, 35 times, then we'll do that too. So he, like I said, he does a great job of tailoring it to what we need to do that game.
I know that you'll get the ball to anybody who is open, but right now it's been Carter Bell and Jack Martins have kind of led the way. I think they both have 17 catches on the year. JJ's hanging back with about 8, but really it's been those three. How important is it to figure out the other receivers and some of that, or is it just take whatever's there?
Yeah, I mean, we have guys that are battling every single day in practice and getting better. You know, obviously those three have had a great season so far. You know, guys like Javion Phelps and Tristan Michaud, those two have had some reps. They've had some catches. Javion obviously had a huge one against St. Thomas. I know Tristan caught a hitch. Guys are just going to keep continuing to develop, and we're going to get the ball to, you know, like you said, any guys that are open, any guys that are making plays, we're going to get the ball to them. And right now it's been those guys, but I know that we have a lot of guys on our team that can make plays.
Football has been in your life forever. Everybody knows your dad, Todd, was a quarterback who went on to play in the league and famously replaced Dante Culpepper for the Vikings at one point. What do you remember about him playing and some of that and just learning those stories as you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, I truthfully, I don't remember a whole lot. I always say this, I'm a Ravens fan because that's the one team I remember the most with my dad being on. You know, and you hear stories sometimes, like, you know, obviously he played with Randy Moss, and like at the time when I was younger, I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, whatever. But like now I think about it, it's like, wow, that's awesome, like just hearing those stories. And I think the one thing that I find the coolest about all of it is that, you know, there's some guys that get caught up with all of it, but for him, he was always a dad first. You know, he was a football player, and that takes a lot, but for him it was how to be a good dad and be a good husband and all that, and showing how he could do both those things. And, you know, it made me still want to be in that position because I could see I can do both of those, you know.
You're obviously carving your own path in life, but how much do you use what you know of his experience in the NFL and some of that as motivation to say, you know what, if he can do it, I can do it too?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to follow in his footsteps. You know, he played at a Division II school, and they didn't pass the ball a lot there, really, at all. And, you know, he got his opportunity, and he made the most of it. You know, that's the one thing. I mean, he always taught me that you have to battle adversity. You know, being a D2 guy, undrafted, and making it in the league for 13 years, like, there's going to be a lot of adversity in there. And I think that's the one thing he taught me the most, is that you have to fight through adversity, and you always have to play confident. So.
It was pointed out last week that John Randall was in the stands as well. Obviously a famous Minnesota Viking. Boy, that's got to be a heck of a Christmas dinner.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I love Uncle John. He's a great guy. I love that family. We're over there quite a bit in the summers at the pool with them, just hanging out. And he loves to golf. I love to golf with him. Yeah, he's awesome.
Is it crazy when you're, like, playing in a game and people are starstruck by people who are there to watch you, and you're just like, well, what's the big deal? It's family.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think I've ever thought about it differently. You know, obviously, I've had that question, like, what's it like your dad being in the NFL? I'm like, you know, he's just my dad, or, you know, Uncle John. Uncle John, just, you know, obviously it's different for some people, but yeah.
And it's been really cool. I know your parents have been great supporters, and seen your dad at a lot of games, and he seems like he's really on board with this, and obviously wants to see you succeed.
Oh, yeah, him and my mom have been my number one supporters my whole life. And you know, they've always been great. He sits in the box there sometimes, and I know a couple of times I'll look up at him, maybe I don't make a great throw, and he'll just be like, come on, next play, you know, like he's always there in my corner along with my mom. So I'm beyond blessed to have those two.
Yeah, well, no doubt it takes a great support system, and obviously you have it at USD on this team right now. This team is having a lot of success, 3-1 here at the moment, a lot of football to be played. What do you like about this team and the possibility that exist if these guys keep locked in each week?
Yeah, these guys love the game, and we care about each other. That's the two main things. You know, like I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of grit, especially defensively too. You know, those guys have been playing, you know, lights out. They've let you know, a couple drives get to the red zone, but they really hammer down and have held them to field goals, which is huge for our momentum. And, you know, offensively, you know, being efficient is what we've been doing. And if we can continue to play football like we have been, it's going to be a really fun year.
You excited for a couple of home games here and not being on the road?
Yeah, I love the fans here. It's going to be awesome.
How much does it change your prep week when you're able to play at home versus on the road with a travel day mixed in?
Yeah, no, it changes it quite a bit, especially, you know, like preparing for a game like last week, you know, getting the noise pumping in here because you know it's going to be loud in those away environments. But yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited to play back at home.
You know, I always think about this. A lot of fans know that work goes in and practice and things like that, but there's a lot of things that happen outside of practice. You know, I talked to Jack Martins here recently, and he talked about you texting everybody, getting them into for throwing sessions and some of that stuff just to get chemistry with the receivers. But there's a lot of film study that goes into this stuff as well. How much do you watch film each week, and how do you try to take notes and things and try to learn from some of that?
Yeah, I don't know if I could put a number on it. You know, it varies. It's a lot, I can say that. But that's a crucial part of the game. You know, you can't go out there and just play football. Like, obviously, you have to have some confidence and play the game within the game. But it's a strategic game. And, we do a good job of really diving into it and you know, analyzing what they're going to do out there. So yeah, it's a really crucial part.
How do you move on when a defense maybe surprises you and it leads to a mistake, or maybe you misread it and throw it to the wrong guy? How do you try to quickly move on from that? Because you go back and look at it and it's like, dang, that could have been a big play.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've really improved from that throughout my time just playing football. You know, I just remember, you know, back freshman year of high school, you know, I throw a pick and I just can't get over it. I'm like, why did I do that? But now it's like next play. That's one thing Davis preaches, is just next play mentality. My dad always says, don't get too high on the high or too low on the lows. You just have to keep going, you know.
Yeah, it takes all of that. All right. for the people, obviously, we're hoping for a big crowd. It's Dakota Days, but then there's still more home games coming up, and next week will be another big one. What's your message to the fans to get them out here, fill this place up, and support this team?
Yeah, this is a fun team to watch. It's a special team. You know, obviously, you saw it last week, the last couple of weeks, and we're going to keep this thing rolling. So come out and support.
All right, appreciate it very much. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you very much.
That's Aiden Bauman. He is the starting quarterback for the University of South Dakota. Obviously, an easy guy to cheer for, and you could tell over the last couple of weeks, you know, he hasn't been asked to do a whole lot, but he has been very, very efficient with what he is doing the last couple of weeks. On the season, he's 48 of 74, 65% passing, 615 yards passing, and 6 touchdowns so far this season. And Carter Bell and Jack Martins, those two guys, you hear a lot about those guys. They each have 17 catches on the year right now. So he continues to share the ball with those guys. And I guarantee you he'll throw it to whoever's open. That's what Aiden Bauman does. But my thanks to Aiden Bauman for joining the podcast and giving us some time to talk about his role and as it's continued to grow with South Dakota. All right, before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics. There is always a lot of things going on in Coyote Athletics. And coming up on Thursday, volleyball is at North Dakota. They'll play in Grand Forks with a start time of 7 o'clock. Women's soccer is at Omaha. They, too, are a 7 o'clock start time. So Summit League volleyball and soccer going on this weekend. Swimming and diving team is at Minnesota State. That's just the women in Mankato. On Friday, that is at 5 o'clock. Then on Saturday, volleyball will play at North Dakota State in Fargo. 1 o'clock start time there in the Shields Arena in Fargo. And then at 2 o'clock, the South Dakota football team will play host to Murray State, the Racers. That's coming up at 2 o'clock on Saturday. On Sunday, softball will play Northern State at 2 o'clock. That's a fall ball game in Vermilion, so the Cavs will host that. And the women's soccer team is in Denver for a 1 o'clock start time in that. Also, coming up this next week, I hope you get a chance to make your way to Homer, Nebraska. That is where the South Dakota men's golf team is set to host a golf tournament for the first time. They've hosted like small events in Vermilion, a duel, things like that, but they are going to host an event, a tournament. It's called Throwdown Up Top at Landman. It's Landman Golf Club. This is the first year that Landman was opened for an entire year. It opened last October just for a month, basically so they could get a few public rounds in and get a review into the Golf Digest. But this was the first year that this golf course was open. It's in Homer, Nebraska, just outside of there, which is not far from Sioux City, Iowa. So that's kind of the area. Look it up. If you get a chance, maybe walk around and see some of the Coyote golfers in action. That is Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. So check that out if you can. Again, that is at Landman Golf Club in Homer, Nebraska. It's Throwdown Up Top at Landman. That is the name of the event. It's a phenomenal golf course and really is going to be a great place for South Dakota to host a meet. So that is the 10th and 11th. Hope you could check it out in Homer, Nebraska. All right, that's what's going on in Coyote Athletics. For schedule information, for ticket information, to stay up to date with all things Coyote Athletics, go to goyotes.com. My thanks to Neil Bradley, Lito Rolfe, and Aiden Bauman for joining the podcast this week. I'm John Thayer. Have a great weekend. Happy D-Days for what's left of it. Enjoy the weekend. And as always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.